Hey, Jamie, I've got a question for you.
What do you want, Tom?
Who's on the podcast this coming Friday? Is it someone big?
Boy.
Is it a big one? Shall I bother listening this week?
Yeah. If I was going to say take.
And I would say off.
No.
Your trousers.
No, no. Take.
Me out.
No. Take.
Paddy McGuinness.
No. Take.
Take on me.
Take that.
Wow.
Have a little patience.
But hang on, presumably you haven't got all three of them, have you? Presumably you've just got one of them.
Buddy, we have all three of them on the podcast. They've released a new album. It's coming out. They're going on tour. They talk about the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, on everything that happened in Take That.
The ins, the outs.
And they reveal it all this Friday.
Exclusively.
On Private Parts.
That's a big one. I'm going to listen to that.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Whole Shift Podcast with me, Jordan Stevens, aka, we don't know yet. But before we get on to that, I'd like to introduce my guest, Teresa Lola.
Hello.
You are now the Young Poet Laureate of London, which is an incredible achievement, and you are yourself, of course, a writer, a poet, a performer. Are there any more slashes, would you say?
No, I'm not.
Any more slashes in the bio?
No, there aren't any. No.
I suppose, like, can you be a poet and not subtly be an activist? Are you kind of an activist just in being a poet?
I don't think I've ever referred to myself as an activist, but I feel like just in existing and writing in this space here in Britain, I am an activist by default.
It's interesting that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You got to give me a nickname right now. What's my nickname?
Oh, gosh.
You should have to go.
Blue Jordan.
Blue
I was
Jordan,
thinking of, like,
brilliant.
Blue Peter.
I love that.
Blue Jordan, and you're wearing, I don't know.
Blue Jordan. Yeah. I mean, for some reason, I feel like it carries quite sad connotations.
And yeah, I feel like it's perfect for this podcast as well, Blue Jordan.
I actually have been... It was weird you say that, because I have been quite fascinated with the colour blue of late.
I'm psychic.
just because more so, I love the fact that we refer to blue as an emotion.
Yes, that's very
but
true.
But there's not another colour to refer to a differing emotion.
That's very true.
I mean, you've got green with envy, but...
You never say I'm feeling green.
Yeah.
You always say I'm feeling blue. Yeah.
Or like I'm feeling pink, or
it's
I'm
a fascinating colour, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting, and also because blue is actually the shade of many incredible things, such as the sky or the sea, which I suppose is also the sky. And also, there's no blue food. Just let that sit for a while.
I have to find.
There's no blue food. I've looked.
There isn't.
No. I mean, there's farmed food that can become blue.
That is very true. I've never eaten anything blue apart from like cake icing.
Yeah, exactly. It's naturally there's no blue food, which is why chefs have blue plasters. So they can 100%.
This might as well be my next book, because it's just so much information. Wow, that's fascinating.
The colour blue. Yeah, no, I was thinking about how bizarre that is as a colour. It's quite significant. All right, so let's begin with how are you?
Me.
As it is a mental health podcast.
I'm good. I'm in a really, really good space in my life. I think when I entered my early 20s, I made a decision that I wasn't just going to continue in that way. My teenage years specifically were emotionally distressful. It wasn't a great time in my life. And when I left uni specifically, I was 21, and I told myself that I couldn't do this anymore. I couldn't continue in that way. And I went to therapy, and I just kind of changed a lot of things in my life, and I feel happier and healthier than ever. So I'm good and chill.
Whoa, so that's quite big. That's pretty much, that's totally on brand.
You say that?
It's on brand. It's you know, it's like a, it's a conscious, it's a conscious move towards something, towards wholeness.
Yeah.
If that is a thing, the wholeness, or maybe even a
it's a continuous thing. It's not, I think that pressure of thinking that it's a now thing, that wholeness is something you achieve now and wholeness is something that you have to be constantly, just gives you a necessary anxiety. And so I've kind of, I'm realizing that wholeness is a continuous thing.
Yes.
And it's not.
Which is why it's a circle.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very true.
It's almost like, developing. How I feel about wholeness now more than ever is really the end goal is to have a comfort with a sense of feeling incomplete in a way. Do you know what I mean? Like the wholeness is actually just a complete ease with the reality that wholeness in itself is a concept, but the idea of feeling whole is an acceptance of that. Maybe.
Very true.
Perhaps. What happened in... Okay, so let's try and build a couple of things into this, because I don't actually know why you became a writer or when you first felt that urge.
Yeah.
But if you could explain your relationship with writing, and also if you were wanting to maybe highlight some of the things that happened in your teen years that led you to want to work a bit on how you felt.
Yeah, so for me, writing has always been a therapeutic tool. Even now, art is, of course, a recommended form of therapy for some. I started writing when I was really young, like in primary school. But in secondary school, poetry was really that diary entry for me.
Right.
I was in boarding school for secondary school, and I was experiencing a huge sense of isolation. And I was also, at that time, being bullied in school as well. So that combination was very intense. And so poetry was kind of, that way of me expressing how I was feeling and just documenting that. And in my poems, I was allowed to be every version of myself, and I could, you know, write myself into the world and write myself into existence and visibility in my work.
Oh.
So that was really why I loved poetry. And even getting to that point of, you know, writing poetry came from reading books, because my mum loved reading and she passed that on to me. It wasn't until I moved to England that I actually took poetry seriously. When I was in second year of uni, I met so many cool creatives, and just being in that space, a lot of just young people doing everything that they wanted to do and just like just being the coolest version of themselves really inspired me. And so I was like, I have to take this seriously. And so my friend signed me up for an open mic night in Batsy Art Centre.
Oh, yeah.
This was in February 15, 2014. I went, I read, and someone in the audience said, you should keep going.
Yeah.
And it became bigger than me. It became just something that was helping me. It became something that was somehow helping people in the audience as well.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I love that, to say that you had utilized writing to express all the different versions of yourself.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that?
Yeah, so obviously people only know once, or what everyone knows, different sides of you. And in that particular space, being young, vulnerable and isolated, people just kind of saw me as the quiet girl who never really spoke or whatever. And I had, you know, I had a lot of things on my mind. When you're young, when you're a teenager, your hormones are just kind of kicking.
Yeah.
And you're a very observational person. I had so much in my mind. There were a lot of things I loved. A part of me wanted to be, you know, a rapper, wanted to just be like that. I love that arrogance that rappers carried. There's so many things that I loved. And so in my work, I could write myself into that. So I love just how I could just create different worlds. I could be an astronaut. I could be in space. I could just do anything I wanted to, and that was what fascinated me about writing.
Yeah, totally. I like the idea of you using it as a form of expression and outside of maybe the world that you were consciously existing in, because that's the kind of message I'd always want to get across to people who maybe haven't tried writing, because it's not always having to be an act of performance. It's actually initially always just a reflective tool.
Very true.
Yeah, and very, I think, true. That, you know, like I remember I've done a couple of sessions going into prisons in London, and just being like, yo, for real, man, like if you guys just wrote down in any form. And you know, some of the resistance is frustrating, not even frustrating, it's, I want to say sad, it's understandable for one, but like, you know, it's because there's something that comes with it, an expectation maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and it gets to the point where I'm like, yo, write it and burn it, man. It's not even about, you know what I mean? It's not even about...
Yeah.
About what you're saying, how to compare. It's not like you're not failing. It's not uncool, anyway. So this time of isolation, would you say that would be your worst period of mental well-being, or did it continue to... Were there continued periods after that point where you felt...
Do you know what's interesting? That wasn't my worst period of my mental health. It was after. It was when I'd moved here and I was, you know, I supposedly I had friends. I was meant to be happy. I was meant to be whole. But I hadn't dealt with that. I hadn't dealt with the things I had battled in my teen years. And so that was probably my worst period mentally, because that was a time when I felt like I was supposed to be happy. I was doing well in school, like just everything was going well for me, but I was still feeling that huge sense of isolation. I was still very unhappy. I was still battling depression, even worse, because I couldn't open up to my friends. I couldn't open up to people in my life. Well, I eventually opened up to my mum, but it was then when I felt like I should be. You know, when you can't, because before being in school, I could pinpoint something. I could say, oh, this is why I'm feeling unhappy. But then what happens when you don't understand why
your circumstances everything change. Is going,
yeah, and people outside feel like you are supposed to be in the best place in your life. So I think that was why it was difficult, because I didn't know how to explain what was happening. So yeah, that was probably the time for me, just when I was in secondary school, so like when I was doing my GCSEs.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's stress worthy in itself.
Yeah, so you have that added anxiety.
Yeah, hugely.
As well.
What do you think about school? You got to be careful, innit, because you're the young people's laureate.
The young people's laureate for London. But no, but...
it's great.
It is great, but having that real conversation... So recently, there was a... Not a protest, sorry. There was a... When you fill out...
A petition.
Yeah, a petition. That word escaped me. A petition for Ofsted to start considering not just the academic abilities of the school, but the mental well-being of the students, way the school supports the students in the school.
That's great.
And I think it's very, very important. So I loved school. I was that nerd in school. But, you know, I think that schools should do more in supporting the well-being of the students.
When I went to school, not even remotely spoken about.
And when you hear, I remember being in school, not going to expose the school I went to, but when you hear the word counselling, it just seemed like a very taboo word. You just thought, if that person in the class is going to counselling, something must be
just no concept.
Wrong with them. Like, we just, do you get what I mean? Like, we thought something terrible.
I got diagnosed with ADHD in the middle of my GCSEs and got given a counsellor.
Did you tell your friends, or did you tell people in school?
I almost like diagnosed myself by accident in a way. Not by accident, but I was ironic. It's actually ridiculous if you think about it. I was so bored in one lesson in IT that I was like, what? I think I would have even gone to as far as, why am I so bored? It was almost that kind of Google
searching. IT was
searching.
Boring though, let's be honest.
Yeah, it was so bad. I got a U in that, which is unmarkable.
Oh my gosh,
it wasn't even,
yeah.
And I actually became a graphic designer after that, so fuck you. But I remember just typing in, and I kind of heard it mentioned from other students or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember so vividly reading this checklist and being like, it was like, if you relate to more than 28 of these 30 points. If you relate to more than 22 of these 30 points, and I related to like 28 of them.
Oh my god!
Like
gosh. And I was like, in class, like, yo, things just happened. Yeah.
So I'm like, damn, man. Like, so I remember, I think I said to my mum or my form tutor, I was like, I don't know what this means, but this is like 100% me, you know. But anyway, regardless of that, they did a little thing called a Connors report where they asked people who around me to fill out a form about me, and then they make basically a mean average.
Yeah.
and it goes through CAMS, which is like children's.
Yeah,
but CBT mainly. But yeah, I had a school counsellor, and in hindsight, now knowing what I know, I'm like, what an opportunity, you know? But no, there was no one around to contextualise that for me at all.
Yeah.
It was more like, oh, this is something I'm going to do, you know, I'll just get over and done with. Mm. Maybe there'll be free biscuits, that kind of vibe. So like, yeah, I think that's an incredible potential tool.
Yeah,
to get schools to incentivize emotional well-being. I mean, like, why is that taking so long?
No, I definitely. I wish I had that.
Yeah.
And I just the same way PE is, you know, compulsory. I think that mental health education should also be, even if it's not part of the syllabus, at least something that the students are constantly reminded of.
And when you began to approach your emotional world from a place that you could see, like your the rest of your life seemed to be going pretty well. Have you since understood the emotions you're experiencing at that time? Do you now, you know, because you said that the scariest thing is you don't know where they're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, I've had that moment. I had that sit down. I've had those conversations, not just with myself, but the people I trust the most.
Right.
So I've been able to have that, but also to have the tools of how to handle whatever triggers I have. So I know when I'm about to get anxious. I know when I'm about to get into a low place. So for me, what was important is just not telling myself, oh, now I'm happy, I'm whole, I'm completely fine. It's actually practically every day, how will I maintain this level of not happiness, but this level of positivity, perhaps.
Yeah.
So for me, I know when I'm reaching those moments. I know when I'm about to backslide, perhaps, and I have those tools. So for me, that's what's helpful.
Can you give an example?
Oh, so I don't know how to explain. It's just a feeling. I know. So basically, in terms of anxiety, I just have those moments where I just completely go blank and I just start thinking about everything, like back from like when I was young, and everything just comes rushing out. And in that moment, I just like completely have a breakdown and I just like weep. And I just for me, that I just become anxious, and then everything just kind of circles in my head. For me, that's what happened. And so when I'm about to have that moment, I just kind of pause. My mom and I go to Costa, and then we just like chill and just talk through everything, and I just kind of relax a bit, and then
what a cathartic tool, talking.
Yeah, so for me, that's what works. For everyone, it's different.
And I reckon we could stretch to talking being almost always
talking a way therapy of dealing
with
it. Kind
not
of
everyone
like
is comfortable with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But it's weird. I don't run to the page. I have to first talk about it.
Yeah, oh my God, because it's from what I understand, it's an energy, you know? Like anxiety and depression, with a form of therapy that I received, was it explored what I think is a reality, but not. I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't got any letters after my name or anything. But like, it's that they're inhibitory emotions. So it's like you're actually feeling something a lot deeper, and these things step in, and you know, and you go like, no, you know. And
I think you literally feel it moving through your body.
Yeah, yes. And then, you know, like, so I like used to live off that anxiety, you know, because whenever I feel sad or whenever I feel angry, even it would be like, and then you build defenses in response to those inhibitory emotions.
Yeah, and sometimes our body tells us. Because everyone has different ways. I know that my body, literally my hair just starts to react to how I'm feeling.
Really?
It's the weirdest thing.
Your hair?
My hair. No, it's wow. It's like, it's funny. Like, I literally, this is like, I knew this like during my GCSEs. I just started losing my hair. I just started losing like my edges. Like, and I love my edges.
Yeah.
But like, that's how my body reacts to stress. That's how my body reacts to me being anxious.
Oh my God.
And it's like really, and some people, they lose weight. Some people just start eating more. Like everyone has different ways in which their body reacts.
Oh, the defense. Yeah,
yeah, like defense. Yeah.
Coping mechanisms.
Understanding your body as well is not just how you're feeling, but physically understanding how your body's reacting to mental health.
What would you say your best period of mental well-being is?
I would say.
What was?
I would say last year and this year.
Great.
That was really when I came into myself as a human being, but also as a poet. Because I've been writing for so long, it's been reflective of every year my journey in life. And I would say last year, I just yeah, I just came into my own, and I just became very confident in myself, in my voice especially, and just understood that everything will be okay and not everything has to be perfect. And thinking of I am whole, that I don't have to feel whole every day, but I have to feel like I am, like, aiming towards that. So I would probably say last year, and it's just continued, and I'm, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
You have just released a book called In Search of Equilibrium.
Yeah.
Which is wonderful.
Thank you.
And I was at the launch of...
Yes.
I was a little bit late.
Yeah, did they?
But not that late. I was technically late enough to have to wait for one of the first poets to finish.
Oh, okay, okay.
So,
still got to see me.
Actually, why did I just drop myself in like that? I could just totally eat over.
I didn't even know you were late.
We'll do oh.
Because I was sitting at the front, like, I couldn't see people coming in.
Oh, no, I was on time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was honestly fractions. But I love the book. I obviously got a copy and saw you read from it, and actually sort of did see the majority of poets supporting you. But you said something, it's in one of the poems, I think, when you say that grief is a universal language. Is that in the poem, or did you say that?
I said that during the Q&A.
You said it during the Q&A, that is it. And that stayed with me.
Wow.
Ever since, and I was like, oh my God, yeah, because it is another thing that unites everyone. You can't not feel grief. Like, I'm trying to think of an instance. I mean, perhaps if you had some kind of, like, evergreen, entirely balanced family who had the elixir of life, but... I mean, I'm sure there'd be a grief in some...
There is. Grief is not just physical loss. Sometimes it's, you know, if a relationship ends, you grieve that person.
Yeah.
That person has died in your life in some form.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the way, like...
Or End of the Wire.
I haven't watched The Wire, so I can't relate.
It's a heavy six seasons or something, man.
Wow. To be invested for that long, that's definitely something.
Oh my
to
God, no,
for.
I felt like I lived in Baltimore. Like, that was,
oh, wow,
that was legit. Anyway, you should definitely watch that.
Too many shows to watch.
Are too many, but The Wire is the best, so.
Okay, yeah. I'll check Rotten Tomatoes and decide.
Oh my God, no, it is the best. Honestly. Okay. And you know what's even more wild? Sorry, this is a bit of a side chat. You know what's more wild about The Wire that I realised is that with our... The kind of, like, evolution of politics and identity politics, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like on quota now to be diverse, right?
Mm-hmm.
I rewatched the first episode of The Wire recently, and this is in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
It feels as if someone has gone into a writer's room and gone, like, now, with our modern day politics, and gone, listen, guys, we've really got to represent.
yeah.
But they just did it. Like, it was a true, I think it was like most honest, like, I think the main characters, when you come in as like a lesbian police officer who is, like, I wouldn't say a badass, but she's like, you know, and then you have a kind of, like, you have the kind of self-destructive male, but he has like his associate is like a much more grounded black guy. You have the head of the police is a black dude. You've got this like female lawyer who's like totally pulling this. It's just like,
this is a talk or a poem. This is like something you should expand on. So we have this and the gym.
Yo, and like honestly, one of the most I'd say menacing characters was a legit kind of female gangster who, like, I think was barely even an actor. Like, I looked her up recently and I found pretty sure she's in prison. I looked her up and I was like, oh shit, I said Snoop.
She's real.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a brilliant show. But I just thought it was really interesting because it's like quite a deep, and I haven't even covered as much ground as I could have just then trying to recap it. But anyway, and it explores every corner of Baltimore. Like, there's first season is like the police, second season, police and projects.
Yeah.
Then it's the docks where the drugs come in. Then it's the schools.
Oh, wow.
Then it's the political institution. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
No, getting too excited. I definitely love The Wire. But you're kind of, I feel like I might go check it out.
Well, you mentioned music before.
Yeah.
And wanting to, one of the aspects of your personality to be some kind of channeling of like the energy of hip hop.
Yeah.
Of course, you very kindly asked me to perform at Rap Party, which is very music orientated. And we're you know, music and mental health are one of the same, I think, in terms of how it feels to listen to music. So is there anything more you want to kind of say in regards to your personal relationship? Are there any specific albums or songs or artists that have that remind you of a moment, that have saved you from a moment, that you go back to?
Yeah, I grew up with a really eclectic music taste. My dad played Fela Kuti, my mum played gospel albums, and then I was in secondary school listening to just hip-hop. So I was like constantly, do you get what I mean? But for me, music has been very therapeutic, the same way poetry has. I originally wanted to be a musician.
Right.
But I realised very quickly I couldn't sing, so I ended up just... you know, just reciting the work and it became poetry. That's like the untold version of how I became a poet.
I love that.
But for me, I love the energy music because music carries this spirit. I love the energy it embodies. I love that when I listen to a song, I feel like I've been transported into the world of the musician. Yeah. And so when I would listen to hip hop, I would feel like I'm just about to go into a boxing ring. And that confidence was what I envied. And so I would emulate that. But I think music has the power not just to unite us, because thinking about being in secondary school, what united us was knowing the lyrics to one particular song. We would all like rap it in parties or like sing it together. And that just, that being united by that was just incredible. Yeah. So in terms of like, you know, the communal process of listening to music, that was something I loved. And the individual feeling of being, you know, kind of a musician singing to me or rapping to me and feeling like this was a conversation between both of us.
Amazing.
So both of that was what I loved. In terms of a particular, you know, I've never had one particular song that I have like various songs for different modes and different different things. I love Janelle Monáe's The Archandroid album. That was the first album I ever bought.
Really? So it's tightrope on it. That's it.
So I also love Mos Def, Mathematics. It's very poetic, that rhyme in the beginning, Mathematics.
Yeah, Mathematics is amazing. Has it got any says on that one? No.
No, I'm talking about the song.
Oh, it's not that. What's that? What's the album's that on?
I think it's Black on Both Sides.
Oh, yeah, Black on Both Sides. Yeah. That album.
Yeah, that album's incredible.
See, my knowledge of artists like Mos Def are mainly on like mixed playlists, so I never really know the
title. Oh, yeah, I get what you mean.
The titles or like the albums. Yeah. I just know that the sounds. But yeah, I've been constantly told by other rappers, like, yo, Mos Def, Mathematics.
It's incredible, incredible. And the things he was talking about as well.
Mm.
Yeah. And Fela Kuti, Water No Get Enemy.
Yeah, that was my... That actually took me out of quite a sad place last year.
Really?
Yeah, because it's just like, I put that on every morning... And then it just, you know, just
it's
like...
It's just, yeah, before Fela comes in. Yeah, I know.
Get enemy.
It's amazing.
Get enemy.
That is literally, that is exactly how it sounds. I love that song. So I have like different...
Amazing. Yeah. I would say that now, actually, I'm going to put an official Whole Truth recommendation. If you are feeling a little glum, just type into whatever you use. Fela Kuti... That's F-E-L-A-K-U-T-I, Water,
No Get
Enemy.
Just it's as a like, musician, absolutely incredible.
Yo, you just can't. It's one of those things, like, I feel it's difficult to not be lifted in some way, even if it's in a melancholy way, you know, because it's just powerful, it's got energy.
It is powerful.
It's like, it's almost like, you know how, like, it's really difficult to be sad and skip at the same time? You ever seen anyone sad? No, it's real, though.
Yeah.
No, like, you know, like, if you were feeling particularly down, the last thing you'd ever want to do is skip, because a part of you knows that you would be happy.
That's such an interesting image. I was just thinking that there's an SNL skit, a sad clown. You have to watch it.
Aren't all clowns?
Have to watch it. Sorry, that's what I had in my mind. It's like, yeah.
Anyways. He frown while skipping? Because I've just never seen that happen.
He goes to birthday parties and just like, I'm here to make you happy. But like, he's like depressed. It's not something to laugh about, but that skit was just... No, the skit is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. It's just, yeah, it made me uncomfortable. That's what I loved. But yeah, anyways... just a little side
love that.
So
when you said you felt this period of isolation, and just go back a little bit to in your teenage years, boarding school, which is tough, I think, for a lot of people, especially, I don't know, anyway.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Were you, when you say isolation, were you aware of mental health at that point? Or was it only later on when you could start to attribute certain terms or ways of dealing with how you felt? Did you know, were you like, oh, you know, I'm acting like this because of this?
No.
So what was that moment?
I'd never even heard of the word depression or anxiety. Even the word I am upset, it was when I moved to, I mean, now that conversation is, you know, it's happening a lot more in Nigeria now, but it was when I moved here, I was like, why are people saying I am upset? Like, even just people saying I am upset was like really weird to me. Like, who cares if you're upset? Like, that's not something, like, genuinely, that's how I felt then. I had no idea how I was feeling. I just thought it was me not knowing how to socialize with other people in my year. I genuinely thought that was what it was, because I'd always grown up being the shy girl, so I just thought it was part of that. Right. So I had no idea. I'm just trying to think of when I had that moment. It came much later, actually. It came when I entered university, because it was when I left university that I decided that, you know, I need to actually deal with
this. It's interesting, but, from a cultural... Oh, and were people starting to say terms then?
Then I became, you know...
Aware of it.
Yeah, I became more aware of it.
Do you think... Is there a... I mean, I'm intrigued by that cultural difference. Like, would you say that for that reason... Do you know what I mean? Like, are people...
Do you know what?
How do people feel in Nigeria?
Things have changed a lot. And so it would be unfair for me to speak from a perspective of what's happening now, because that conversation is happening a lot more.
You just said that, yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of... There are mental health charities now. And, you know, I even know a therapist, you know, based in Nigeria.
Yeah.
And so that conversation is a lot better than it was when I was there. But at the time, that wasn't a conversation people were having. And you have to think about not just the cultural... difference, but also a country that is so tied to religion, mental health was
right.
part of that.
It's a taboo, isn't
and
it?
So yeah, so it was really about this is definitely an evil spirit, and just kind of just being, you know, and that conversation has definitely changed and widened, and it's a lot better now. But that was really the way it was then. So yeah, things have changed a lot better, thankfully. But to what extent, I'm not entirely sure.
Well, I feel like as a species, someone asked me the other day, they were like, and I kind of believe they were coming from more of a cynical perspective, like in a healthy way.
Yeah.
They were like, do you not think that, you know, with all these terms, anxiety, depression bubbling around, and very specific kind of intersections of anxiety and intersections of, do you think people are just attaching themselves to these ideas and, if anything, manifesting them? And I thought, like, totally valid discussion for one.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there is an argument. I definitely believe in manifesting stuff. Like, I definitely believe in believing in something so much that it becomes you. You know, it's like when you see severe cases of hypochondria, one of the most sad angles of that as an outsider is seeing a healthy person make themselves ill from out of fear.
That's very true,
you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I suppose in that sense, it's kind of fortunate that there's a term for that, though, so they can maybe recover.
That's very true. I don't know if you know the Gypsy Rose case. It was a mother who convinced her daughter that she was ill.
That's called... what's that called? It's got a term.
Yeah, there's a word for that, which I can't remember.
It's called, like, mush and...
I can't remember it's called, like, so I can't even
it's
tell
called,
you
like,
wrong.
It's called like mash and... Oh, no. It's like called like mash and shoulder or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
but then it's
remember.
Something
yeah.
by proxy.
Yeah,
you can get by proxy where...
That's very true, yeah.
Where it date the parent convinces the child yeah. that they're ill, that yeah. the child is ill.
Yeah.
Is that the case you're talking about?
That was the case, yeah. Oh, so he convinced the daughter that she was...
The daughter was ill. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's... Yeah. It's called something like Mashalda by proxy. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah. That and yeah, it's really scary, those kind of things. But I, yeah. but I was going to say that my response aside of that as well is I think we don't allow enough conversation to be based around the reality that we're facing, especially with technology. Mm. Because if you take, for example, like, we know, I know anyway, in my life, the phone can easily become a deflective tool, you know? But at the exact same time, it's also a necessary tool. Very so true. It's like, you know what I mean? It's becoming a limb, but in its very foundation, it's removing you from your, it's taking you out of yourself for a sec.
Yeah.
So it's like, of course, universally, there's going to be a desire to understand well-being, because I think there's actually just more of a force pushing against that human connection in the first place. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think...
Why wouldn't we be anxious is what I'm saying.
That is very true. I mean, there's that conversation about whether everyone has some sort of mental illness or whether it's
like
just
it's a spectrum. Yeah,
yeah. But I think, as you said, it's really a conversation. I think whatever tool we have will only magnify whatever we're battling with or dealing with. So social media, someone who's probably dealing with anxiety, social media doesn't cause that. It just kind of magnifies that.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? But you do have people in general, yeah, people totally. Always abuse things. You know, when we think of any movements, now we have the, you know, movement to, you know, stop and reduce the stigma of mental health. People always take advantage of that. I mean, know of issues of people having false suicide alarms, like false alarms that, oh, they're going to commit suicide on social media just to get attention.
Yeah.
So people always misuse these things.
Which is dangerous for people who are genuinely trying to address
but we can't focus on that. We can't deflect the movement anyways. We have to focus on what is at hand, you know, really reducing the stigma and having those important conversations about mental health. But in terms of, you know, how many people are battling with mental health and whether it's a general thing that everyone, you know, is dealing with, I've met people who say yes, that's the case, and others who think no. It's a spectrum anyways.
I think, yeah, it is a spectrum, and I think I feel more impassioned kind of than ever in regards to just for me, like, especially talking about social media, there is a place I was in last year and I know exactly how I felt, and I know that the situations that caused me to feel, I'd say it was an anxiety. I remember it'd be like, I'd look at something from a particular person or a particularly triggering situation, and in that moment, these voices would just enter, you know, self-doubt, inadequacy, fear, you know, I need to be liked by this person, or I need to be validated by this person's existence, and oh god, it would ruin my day. Like, oh my god, what even is my day? Like, what am I doing? And my shoulders would get up, and you know, like, and now I can literally go to that same place and not feel that. That's what I want to relate to people.
Wow.
Because it's like, it's not even,
you have regained that power.
Yeah, it's like, it's not even like I'm not speculating. It's like there's a quite obvious parallel where now a specific person or a specific situation can be mentioned to me, and I won't instantly go to a place of like fear, because it's like I've released whatever was underlying that. Because it's nothing to do with the situation, is it? It's like, it's not, if you go online and you're like, if you go online and you're, okay, so in my example, as trying to be as honest as possible, if I went online and I saw a picture of a person who I had had a disagreement with, my knee-jerk reaction would be to actually make peace. Not. I'm not saying that it should never be an option. If I went online and saw a picture of a person who I'd had some kind of emotional conflict with, you know, or a picture of a person who I admired or wished I was, you know. there would be like an anxious reaction, which would be like, oh, how can I do this? Or how can I, maybe I should do this to make myself feel better about that situation. But like underpinning all of those variations, so it could be that person, this person, it could be that picture, you know, this new thing. Underlying all of that, for me, has mostly been like a real fear of abandonment that I spent like my entire life building up walls around it, like in every way possible.
Yeah.
To some extent, even creativity, like not in its origination, not in my original love for creativity, but definitely in the way I was wanting it to be expressed, or how I was hoping that expression would get me somewhere else. And it's like, so if I just go and work, you know, I really believe that if I just ease, and I have been doing this again and again, go, actually, that fear isn't even that scary. That's what, so it's like, it's not even a thing of avoiding it. It's going like, okay, let's say I'm more scared of abandonment than anything in the world. How does that feel? And when you really, I think, allow yourself to understand how that feels, then you see that picture and it's not even like near, you know what I mean? It's not even near to that's creating that space, because the root of it is like, oh, it's cool, man. We know that space now, you know?
Wow. That's so powerful. No, and thinking about that, I was thinking about marking your progress and how it's individual for everyone. And we have different ways of marking our progress. And I just love hearing
that. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Is there any, do you have an example of that, like a space that you would have been in? I suppose with poetry, you just said it yourself, didn't you? That like,
yeah, I think poetry has marked my own progress. But mine has been a gradual thing, so it's not been like a light bulb moment. It's been a gradual thing. But as I said, last year was probably the time I felt healthier.
Yeah, I suppose it's, yeah. But it's gradual in that you learn how to manage yourself, don't you? What you need. Yeah. You're saying with your body and stuff.
Yeah, so for me, I've learned how to, so I know when it's about to happen and I'm able to kind of take a step back and just reflect. So yeah, thankfully, I've been able to kind of manage myself and my emotions.
Which is great. All right, so let's ease up on it a little bit. It's getting a bit, you know, I just like to have a little emotional break. Not an actual emotional break. That's the scary kind. That's what they call sometimes a breakdown, as an emotional break.
Oh, I was thinking of something completely different.
What were you thinking of?
I was thinking of like a breakup, like an emotional break. Oh, like I want to go and, yeah. No. Cause I'm, yeah.
What's your favourite colour?
Red.
What type of red?
Ruby Woo MAC lipstick red.
Ruby MAC.
I love bright red, because I just, when, if I wear red lipstick or I wear a red dress, I just feel powerful.
Why?
I don't know what it is. Red just makes me feel powerful. Got that energy. I mean, even if you think of the movies, whenever like the woman like the sexy dress. Assassin's about to come in, she's gonna have a red lipstick, red dress, like it's just, yeah, and heels. I don't know. Red just makes me feel powerful.
Dragons?
No.
Fire.
I'm not really into dragons.
What
do you mean in terms of red? Like red dragon? A red dragon? I've never seen a red dragon.
I don't think they're literally red.
Oh, okay.
But they're kind of associated with it. I mean, definitely in like...
I get what you mean. Like, yeah.
Maybe Chinese culture, I think.
Oh, yeah, that is actually
red
very
Red is the
true.
Lucky colour of China.
Yeah,
it's
true. That's very true.
Red dragon, yeah, it just seems to be a thing.
Yeah, and I love that when we draw the heart, we colour it red, but like red is also associated with danger as well.
And blood.
So I kind of, yeah, and blood, and I love how both exist in the same space. Well, red is both love and dangerous.
Yeah. It's a very juxtaposing colour.
Yeah, it's a very interesting, it keeps surprising, so I love red. Yeah.
Which isn't the colour of Christmas.
It's green, apparently.
Yeah.
But red looks better.
No, but Coca-Cola did that. You know,
yeah, it's true. Yeah, I was reading up on that. But would you want would you take a picture of a Santa Claus dressed in green?
Yeah.
Okay, I wouldn't.
I definitely would. I think Christmas should be totally refreshed.
And like just
apparently St. Nicholas like only used that time to help the underprivileged.
St. Nicholas, the
saint and witch, I think.
I think everyone has different
Father
ways
Christmas
to celebrate.
Is based on.
I don't know. Everyone has different ways to celebrate Christmas. Some look at Father Christmas. Some use it to prepare for the Chinese New Year. Christians use it celebrating the birth of Jesus. So, I don't know. If you're going to change it, it's going
to
be difficult.
I use it to eat.
I love eating as well.
You know what I mean? I'm like, it's such a hypocrite.
It's the
as
one
well.
Day you don't feel guilty about.
Oh, eating. I feel guilty. If you ate as many mince pies as me.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it would be. And I'm a hypocrite as well because it's like I'm definitely a bit of a Scrooge, you know, just because because I'm not a massive fan of consumerism culture. So it's like when it comes around, especially in the UK, not so much in other countries, but it's like all encompassing. It's like you gotta spend money. I know.
People always go. Yeah.
You must spend money, you know, and it's like, and mum must cook the turkey, and dad, and actually maybe dad cooks the turkey as well. It doesn't matter.
And if you're not participating in that, you're probably seen as like lonely or something, you
right? Know? And then I get all like worked up by that, but then BBC Two probably will play Rush Hour, which is like one of my favourite films.
Oh,
and then like, and
why
like,
did they play it over Christmas?
I don't know.
It's not even a Christmas movie.
It's nothing to do with Christmas. And then the mince pies will come out, man, and I'll be like, I hate Christmas while my face is stuffed with mince pies. What's your favourite shape? Yes, you got that. I saw it. I thought you got that.
Is that it's not really
mate.
Perfect. Yes.
You come in repping, mate. That's actually.
I have to say circle. I can't say triangle.
You can say triangle if you want. You can actually say something really obscure.
I've never really thought of. I would say circle. Yeah, I would say circle.
Because it's just everything.
Yeah, I love
it's
a circle.
It's the start, it's the end.
Yeah. I love a circle.
Also, if we didn't have... I mean, there's no way we couldn't
It's the most
have
interesting
circles,
shape, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I have a poem about a circle in my book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is actually...
Yeah.
That was...
So I guess it's a circle.
That's how... I mean, that's how the whole charity started, was trying to look into the fascination around curves. No corners. How comfortable are you talking about your mental health publicly? Like, how do you feel with the book out and stuff? Or be your books out? Was it your first book?
Yeah, it's my first book.
Is it your first book?
Yeah, first ever book.
Oh, right.
So I knew it had to be important. I knew it had to be something that was urgent for me, and that was urgent for me. I am very comfortable talking about my mental health now, I think because I'm in a good space, and because I'm very aware of the crisis happening right now with young people in London especially. And so I'm comfortable talking about my mental health, but I'm also conscious of how important it is to. It's not that you have to constantly talk about your mental health. If it's something that you're comfortable doing and you're in the position to help others, then I think you should. So I am.
I'll give it your best shot talking, you know.
Yeah. Definitely, definitely.
Hard,
so I love what you're doing, for sure.
Trying, but yeah. No, it is. I just really want us as... I just want all of us to be as human as possible. And I really feel like being a human being is 70%... like just looking at other people and then saying
Observe,
things.
Yeah. Very true, very true.
You know
true.
What I mean? It's like literally just looking at someone just saying things. Mm. Do you have any practical advice in terms of looking after mental health, or just examples of stuff that you do? Is there like a daily practice? Is there like a, you know, is...
You know, there are a lot of resources available online. So a lot of resources. So if the issue is anxiety specifically related to social media, the internet is a great tool. There are a lot of literally step-by-step guides of practically what to do that could help you. So I would say the internet, this is not just for me, this is in general for any young person listening. The internet is a really helpful guide. A lot of charities on their website will have those guides. And there are a lot of talking therapies, like literally text that are free or low cost as well. In terms of my own practical guides, I have to have... So I mentioned like going to... Once a month, my mum and I would go out for coffee and we'll just sit... We'll just talk, and it's just that day I usually don't do anything, and it's just both of us. And I also
once
have,
a month,
yeah,
love that
coffee.
It's and, quite, it's quite cinematic.
Yeah, don't tempt me because I would then film the next one.
I
but
think you should. Just saying.
Yeah. But yeah, and I also have a day a week where I just reflect while I'm just in my room. My mum does it, and I think I kind of learned it from her. She's just in her room, and no one can knock. She just sits there.
Wow.
Yeah, and she just reads.
For how long?
Usually for like a few hours. She'll just read and just like, we don't knock on the door, we just kind of leave her. So like, I always have that period of reflection where I'm just on my own and I just reflect on the week. How is it going? What do I need to do? How am I feeling emotionally, mentally?
I love that.
So, yeah, those are like my two things. I have to have a period of reflection and then a period of conversation with somebody else.
And if you were to have, we have an incentive, which is whole hour, which is to just try and encourage those, you know, spending a lot of time interacting with technology or maybe in like a high pressure job or school to dedicate an hour of their time to themselves in the most natural way possible.
What, a day or ever?
No, an hour, just an hour in the day, but hopefully every day, hopefully more than an hour. But what would it be that you'd do?
Quiet time. What more do I do?
What would it be that? Would that be how you
my hour. Yeah, just quiet time.
Love
myself.
That. Quiet time. I just love
quiet
that as
time
a phrase.
Is important, yeah.
I remember I tried to take a silence for comic relief once.
For how long?
A day. I think it was the hardest thing I ever did in my life.
I can't die.
And you know what? This is not even a lie. I found the book that I was using. So like this is, so you know, I had a book with me that I'd write things on. Yeah. In the day, I found it the other day.
Days.
It was from when I was like 10. Just the things I was like. I think I from memory, it was like the least profound thing.
Yeah.
It's like
no.
I think I just written like, can I go to the toilet?
do you know? I'm everything at 10. I'm just thinking, no, you could do it for this. You could. That is something you can expand on. That is amazing.
I mean, I am. One thing I've learned with working on myself is how to not feel silences. Mm. That was just my go-to. I was at, even one time I was actually invited to a dinner party to fill silences.
Wow.
I was literally brought by a friend because there was an awkward situation between four people there.
Yeah.
And he was like, yo, just
that
come
is
through.
A job to have. You literally that yeah.
Just to be quick, like,
you
so
can.
If there was a moment when they were like, oh yeah, we did that. And I'll be like, I love apple pie.
That is amazing.
Just go insane.
Oh wow. No, silence is a fascinating thing.
But there's, it's so powerful.
It is. There is this guy, I watch random stuff. He was silent for 54 years. He gave a TED talk.
Sorry, what?
Yeah, he gave a TED talk after breaking that silence.
54 years.
It. I'll send you the link.
I don't believe it.
I think it's should I check now? I don't know, my phone's like falling. But yeah, he was silent for a very long period of time. I think it's 54 years. But he gave a TED talk after.
But wait, was this a decision?
I can't remember. I just remember watching it in a classroom once.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But he wrote things down, right?
I'm sure he did.
That would be bizarre to just... You can look it up.
Is it John Francis, that one?
John... Probably. Oh yeah, it was John Francis.
Woof. With the knowledge. No. Well, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Not necessarily. No. I'm
What are your socials again? It's at Teresa.
At Teresa _ Lola.
Yeah.
Yeah.
T-H.
With Teresa with a H. So T-H-E-R-E-S-A _ Lola.
Sorry, say that again.
T-H-E-R-E-S-A. So Teresa just with a H.
I know, but you said A _ Lola. So... fluidly.
Really?
That was like T-H-R-E-S-T-L-O-L-A.
_ Lola.
Wicked. All right, awesome. So, yes, I hope everyone follows you and sees you embark upon the most exciting points in your career so far, which is great.
Yeah, I hope so. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Powered by Spirit Studios.